The tiny antelope stepped out from the deep shadow of the thorn thicket, and the early morning sunlight gleamed on the silky pelt. It kept walking steadily across the narrow clearing. Nicholas's breathing quickened with excitement as he followed it with the telescopic sight. It was ridiculous that he should feel so wrought up with the hunting of such a humble little animal. But his previous failures had sharpened his anticipation. Added to that was the peculiar passion that drives the true collector. Since he had lost Rosalind and the girls, it had thrown all his energy into the building up of the collection at Quentin Park. Now, suddenly, procuring this specimen for it had become a matter of supreme importance to him. His forefinger rested lightly on the side of the trigger guard. He would not fire until the dick-dick came to a standstill. Even that walking pace would make the shot uncertain. He had to place his bullet precisely, to kill swiftly, but at the same time to inflict the least possible damage to the skin. To this end, he had loaded the Rigby with full metal jacket bullets, ones that would not expand on impact and open a wide wound channel, nor rip out a gaping hole in the coat as they exited. These solid bullets would punch a tiny hole the size of a pencil that the taxidermist at the museum would be able to repair invisibly. He felt his nerves screwing up as he realised that the dick-dick was not going to stop in the open. It made steadily for the thick scrub on the far side of the clearing. This might be his last chance. He fought the temptation to take the shot at the moving target, and it required an effort of will to lift his finger off the trigger again. The antelope reached the wall of thorn scrub, and the moment before it disappeared stopped abruptly and thrust its tiny head into the depths of one of the low bushes. Standing broadside to Nicholas, it began to nibble at the pale green tufts of new leaves. The head was screened, so he had to abandon his intention of going for that shot. However, the shoulder was exposed. He could make out the clear outline of the blade beneath the glossy red-brown skin. The dick-dick was angled slightly away from him, in the perfect position for the heart shot, tucked in low behind the shoulder. Unhurriedly, he settled the reticule of the scope on the precise spot, and squeezed the trigger. The shot whip-cracked in the heavy heated air, and the tiny antelope bounded high, coming down to touch the earth already at a full run. Like a rapier rather than a cutlass, the solid bullet had not struck with sufficient shock to knock the dick-dick over. Head down, the dick-dick dashed away in the typical frantic reaction to a bullet through the heart. It was dead already, running only on the last dregs of oxygen in its bloodstream. "Oh, no, not that way!" Nicholas cried as he jumped to his feet. The tiny creature was racing straight towards the lip of the cliff. Blindly it leapt out into empty space and flipped into a somersault as it fell, dropping from their sight down almost 200 feet into the chasm of the Dandera River. "That was a filthy bit of luck!" Nicholas jumped over the bush that had hidden them and ran to the rim of the chasm. Royan followed him, and the two of them stood peering down into the giddy void. "There it is," she pointed, and he nodded. "Yes, I can see it." The carcass lay directly below them, caught on an islet of rock in the middle of the stream. "What are you going to do?" she asked. "I'll have to go down and get it." He straightened up and stepped back from the brink. "Fortunately, it's still early. We've plenty of time to get the job done before dark. I'll have to go back to camp and fetch the rope to get some help." It was afternoon before they returned, accompanied by Boris, both his trackers and two of the skinners. They brought with them 4 coils of nylon rope. Nicholas leaned out over the cliff and grunted with relief. "Well, the carcass is still down there. I had visions of it being washed away." He supervised the trackers as they uncoiled the rope and laid it out down the length of the clearing. "We will need 2 coils of it to get down to the bottom," he estimated, and joined them, painstakingly tying and checking the knot himself. Then he plumbed the drop, lowering the end of the rope down the cliff until it touched the surface of the water, and then hauling it back and measuring it between the spread of his arms. 30 fathoms. 180 feet. "I won't be able to climb back that high," he told Boris. "You and your gang will have to haul me back up." He anchored the rope end with a bowline to the bole of one of the wiry thorn trees. Then he again tested it meticulously, getting all four of the trackers and skinners to heave on it with their combined weight. "That should do it," he gave his opinion, as he stripped to his shirt and khaki shorts and pulled off his chukka boots. On the lip of the cliff he leaned out backwards with the rope draped over his shoulder, and the tail brought back between his legs in the classical abseil style. "Coming in on a wing and a prayer," he said, and jumped out backwards into the chasm. He controlled his fall by allowing the rope to pay out over his shoulder, breaking with the turn over his thigh, swinging like a pendulum and kicking himself off the rock wall with both feet. He went down swiftly until his feet dangled into the rush of water, and the current pushed him into a spin on the end of the rope. He was a few yards short of the spur of rock on which the dead Dick Dick lay, and he was forced to let himself drop into the river. With the end of the rope held between his teeth, he swam the last short distance with a furious overarm crawl, just beating the current's attempt to sweep him away downstream. He dragged himself up onto the island and took a few moments to catch his breath before he could admire the beautiful little creature he had killed. He felt a familiar melancholy and guilt as he stroked the glossy hide and examined the perfect head with the extraordinary proboscis. However, there was no time now for regrets, nor for the searching of his hunter's conscience. He trussed up the Dick-Dick, tying all four of its legs together securely. Then he stepped back and looked up. He could see Boris's face peering down at him. "Haul it up!" he shouted, and gave three yanks on the rope as the agreed signal. The trackers were hidden from his view, but the slack in the rope was taken up, and then the Dick-Dick lifted clear of the island and rose jerkily up the wall of the chasm. Nicholas watched it anxiously. There was a moment when the rope seemed to snag, when the carcass was two-thirds of the way to the top, but then it freed itself and snaked on up the cliff. Eventually, the Dick-Dick disappeared from his sight, and there was a long delay until the rope end dropped back over the lip. Boris had been sensible enough to weight it with a round stone the size of a man's head, and he was hanging over the top of the cliff, watching its progress and signalling to his men to control the descent. When the end of the weighted line touched the surface of the water, it was just out of Nicholas's reach. From the top of the cliff, Boris began to swing the line until the end of it pendulumed close enough for Nicholas to grab it. With a bowline knot, Nicholas tied a loop in the end of the line and slipped it under his armpits. Then he looked up at Boris. "Heave away!" he yelled, and tugged the dangling rope three times. The slack tightened, and then he was lifted off his feet. He began to ascend in a series of spiralling jerks and heaves. As he rose, the belled wall of the chasm arched in to meet him, until he could fend off from the rock with his bare feet and stop himself spiralling at the end of the rope. He was 50 feet from the top of the cliff when suddenly he stopped abruptly, dangling helplessly against the rock face. "What's going on?" he shouted up at Boris. "A bloody rope is jammed," Boris yelled back. "Can you see where it is stuck?" Nicholas peered up and realized that the rope had rolled into a vertical crack in the face, probably the same one that had almost stopped the Dick-Dick reaching the top. However, his own weight was almost 5 times that of the little antelope, and had forced the rope much more deeply into the crack. He was suspended high in the air, with a drop of almost 100 feet under him.
"Try and swing yourself loose!" Boris shouted down at him.
Obediently, Nicholas kicked himself back and twisted on the rope to try and roll it clear. He worked until the sweat streamed down into his eyes, and the rope had rubbed him raw under the arms.
"No use!" he shouted back at Boris. "Try to haul it out with brute force!"
There was a pause, and then he saw the rope above the crack tighten like a bar of iron as 5 strong men hauled on the top end with all their strength. He could hear the trackers chanting their working chorus as they threw all their combined weight on the line. His end of the line did not budge. It was a solid jam, and he knew then that they were not going to clear it. He looked down. The surface of the water seemed much further than 100 feet below.
The terminal velocity of the human body is 150 miles an hour, he reminded himself. At that speed, the water would be like concrete. I won't be going that fast when I hit, will I? He tried to reassure himself.
He looked up again. The men on the top of the cliff were still hauling with all their weight and strength. At that moment, one of the strands of the nylon rope sheared against the cutting edge of the rock crack and began to uncurl like a long green worm.
"Stop pulling!" Nicholas screamed. "Vast heaving!"
But Boris was no longer in sight. He was helping his trackers, adding his weight to the pull. The second strand of the rope parted and unravelled. There was only a single strand holding him now. It was going to go at any moment, he realised.
"Boris, you ham-fisted bastard, stop pulling!"
But his voice never reached the Russian, and with a pop like a champagne cork, the third and final strand of the rope parted. He plunged downwards, with the loose end of the severed rope fluttering above his head. Flinging both arms straight upwards over his head to stabilise his flight, he straightened his legs, arrowing his body to hit feet first. He thought about the island under him. Would he miss its red rock fangs? Or would he smash into it and shatter every bone in his lower body? He dared not look down to judge it in case he destabilised his fall and tumbled in mid-air. If he hit the water flat, it would crush his ribs or snap his spine. His guts seemed to be forced into his throat by the speed of his fall, and he drew one last breath as he hit the surface feet first. The force of it was stunning. It was transmitted up his spine into the back of his skull, so that his feet cracked against each other and bright lights starred his vision. The river swallowed him under. He went down deep, but he was still moving so fast when he hit the rocky bottom that his legs were jarred to the hips. He felt his knees buckle under the strain, and he thought that both his legs had been broken. The impact drove the air out of his lungs, and it was only when he kicked off the bottom, desperate for air, that he realised with a rush of relief that both his legs were still intact. He broke out through the surface, wheezing and coughing, and realised that he must have missed the island by only the length of his body. However, by now the current had carried him well clear of it. He trod water on the racing stream, shook the water from his eyes, and looked around him swiftly. The walls of the chasm were streaming past him, and he estimated his speed at around 10 knots, fast enough to break bone if he hit a rock. As he thought it, another small island flashed past him, almost close enough to touch. He rolled onto his back and thrust both feet out ahead of him, ready to fend off should he be thrown onto another outcrop.
"You're in for the whole ride," he told himself grimly. "There is only one way out, and that is to ride it to the bottom."
He was trying to calculate how far he was above the point where the river debouched from the chasm through the pink stone archway, how far he still had to swim.
3 or 4 miles at the least, and the river falls almost 1,000 feet. There are bound to be rapids and probably waterfalls ahead, he decided. From here it does not look good. I'd say the betting is 3 to 1 against getting through without leaving some skin and meat on the rocks behind me.